This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Textiles in North Carolina were once at the heart of our economy. For decades, there were hundreds of thousands of North Carolinians working in textile mills across the state. But in the early 2000s, the industry plummeted. Much of the decline had to do with outsourcing and mechanization. A lot of people think the textile business has collapsed, but much of the industry is still thriving here. Bland Godfrey is dean of the College of Textiles at North Carolina State University. Welcome, Bland. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Also with us, Robert Newton, who is director of the documentary film Still Standing, The Real Story of North Carolina Textile Industry. Robert, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Tell us about the documentary. What inspired it? I guess I was part of the, although you had already made the documentary when I prompted you to rage.
I was in I was in the middle of making it, driving in my car one day, and I was trying to make a documentary about to counter the narrative that had come up that the textile industry was dead, and a lot of that was driven by the media. And I was listening to this show, which I like, and you were interviewing someone, you made an offhand comment, and you said, of course, textiles are dead and everything, and I just started yelling at the radio. No, Frank, they're not dead. So it was sort of a dream to be able to come on this show.
Set the record straight.
Set the record straight and tell you to straight that that it wasn't dead.
But I was absolutely wrong, and tell us why.
I grew up in a textile family. My father, my great uncles, all my cousins, everyone worked in the textile industry. And I was in a textile town of Shelby, North Carolina. And although I didn't stay in textiles, it was as I got older and the industry began to collapse, I was a television producer. But I began to hear people saying, well, the textile industry is no more. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, well, that's just not true. It hasn't really completely collapsed. And I was talking to a photographer one day who asked me, my family still had a textile mill, and he said, can I come and take pictures of your textile mill? And I said, sure, any day you want to. And he said, well, what days is it open? And I said, well, it's open every day. And he said, oh, so you just present it to the public. Did you preserve it? And I said, preserve it? It's a working textile mill. Yeah. And he had no idea that there were any working textile mills left.
Could I talk to some of your docents?
Yeah, exactly. He thought that we were just volunteers that came in and ran. I said, no, we make...
So what were you making?
They were making cloth for wiping cloths for the Lowe's Corporation, 50,000 pounds a week to every Lowe's store around the country.
So the narrative, Bland, that drove me to my error was that manufacturing had gone overseas because it was cheaper to do there, and textile making is an industry. It's a factory, and you can make those factories operate cheaper elsewhere. If it was still going, and it still is, well, how did they survive and who survived that big fallout in the 2000s?
First of all, there's a confusion always between textiles and apparel. And textiles, which is the yarn, the fabrics, the woven, non-woven, knitted materials, is still not only here, it's very strong and stronger every year. The apparel is where you have a lot of labor. And so the people who do the cut and sew, and it's easy to move a sewing machine. It's not easy to move a $200 million plant. And so these companies that moved offshore were mainly apparel companies. They were the ones with the high labor cost. The others who were not brain dead, who were very much alive, who were really thinking and looked at automation, looked at how to produce more. Like Parkdale, the biggest cotton yarn producer in the world is in Gastonia. The second biggest is in Sanford, North Carolina, Frontier. So these two companies are booming, actually selling cotton yarn in China cheaper than the Chinese can buy it there. Other companies who are more in the high tech, everything from the non-wovens, which is everything from the wipes he's talking about, up to technical products like filters. Your car has 7 filters in it. And blood filters in the hospitals or air filters in your house. These companies are absolutely booming. We have brand new labs in the university and the College of Textiles just developing new filters. It's a rapidly growing business. Not with the Swiffer, the little floor mop.
No. Oh.
That's a $2 billion market.
Wow. Wow. I hope we didn't design the commercial here, but the product, okay, we can talk about that. The commercial drives me nuts. So listen, Robert, what does it mean in terms of the industry, though? So people are still making fabric, and they're making a profit, but in terms of economic development, fewer and fewer people are working in the textile industry?
Yeah, I think there was an article in the New York Times just a few weeks ago or a couple of months ago about textile industry had survived, but with far fewer people. If you go down in my documentary, we go down to Gaffney, South Carolina, which is just across the line, where Parkdale has a $50 million facility they just built. And there are and it's enormous. I mean, it's several football fields long and wide, and people have to, you can't even walk from one end to the other. Everyone rides around on little carts. But a facility like that would have had many hundreds, maybe 1,000 workers, and they're able to do this now with just a couple of hundred workers. But the good news is, I mean, that's bad, but if you're driving in Gaffney, you will see little signs at intersections saying hiring, textile company hiring, and that's Parkdale looking for workers, which you never saw. In the 2000s, you haven't seen for years, but you're starting to see that. And I love that. I it's not actually in the documentary, but I got out and shot a picture of that sign where people were putting all kinds of little signs that just said textile company hiring. And I thought that was...
Yeah, and it's always a complicated picture when you talk about people losing their jobs to some forms of automation and high technology. Right. Somebody's making jobs by producing the technology, and that's what's happening at the universities,
yeah.
Right?
Our students, our graduates, many of them will have jobs by January before May graduation. I mean, we're actually booming. We have record enrollment, 1,174 students this year. About 200 of them are graduate students. We have 17 PhDs graduating in December, and they'll all be either hired by universities, but the majority will be hired by industry. Some companies, 5 of their top 6 people are our PhDs because they're developing new products. I mean, one product that nobody even thinks of is an airplane. It's all carbon fiber composites nowadays, whether it's a new Airbus, a 350, or whether it's a new Boeing 787, or the new wings for the 777 that they're redesigning, are all high-strength carbon fiber composites. And now BMW's, the new one cars, are all carbon fiber bodies. So they're much lighter, much stronger, much more fuel efficient, and will last a lot longer.
Knit me an airplane, will you?
It's actually woven.
Well, thank you for making that distinction. Well, many textile businesses are actually sprouting in North Carolina. Pure Thread in Durham is one of those, and they do create specialized fabrics. Lisa Grimes is CEO of Pure Thread Technologies, and she joins us now. Hello, Lisa.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Tell us, you're welcome. Tell us about Pure Thread. What do you make?
Well, we are kind of a blend. We believe we're a life sciences textile company, and we incorporate an antimicrobial into the fibers that we make. And so we really, our goal is to bring to market hospital textiles who have these antimicrobial properties because we want to long-term make the patient environment safer. Currently, our products are in the freshness and odor-free category.
So if you're working in this kind of field, as you suggest, biotechnology seems to be an important part of your research and development. And if that's true, I would guess it helps to be in this part of the country here in the Triangle. Am I right?
Absolutely. It is the reason that we are here because I too grew up in a textile family down in eastern North Carolina. My mother worked in the textile industry, and then I'm a pharmacist by training, and we are blending both of those. So being right here in the heart of a lot of great medical centers and, you know, very close by with fabulous textile companies, we really just didn't think we could find a better place to have our headquarters.
And there are a lot of these companies, Robert, right around the corner. We may not see them, but, you know, just within a few blocks of this place, apparently we're making fabric, right?
Yes. There's a company called Mitz Knits, just literally a stone's throw from this studio in Durham. And almost no one in Durham knows that it exists. And I love what Lisa was just talking about because she came from a textile family. And that's one of the points of the documentary was that it's in our blood and that it really, this was, as I grew up, the textile state. And mm-hmm. and it bugged me that we had lost that distinction. And that was one of the reasons to make the documentary. And can I tell where the website? Can I just pitch the website?
No, sure.
It's www.stillstandingtextiles.com.
And that's if you want to see the film. So, Blan, that also suggests that this is the thing you don't outsource. It's innovation, technology, and having these hubs where, you know, frankly, places where they do cheap manufacturing are not going to develop these kind of products.
No, and even some apparel companies are coming back to North Carolina now. They want to be close to the yarn manufacturers. They want to be close to the fabric manufacturers. They want to be close to the technology. They want to go into the next generation. Protective gear is just huge. And we have a huge research center in the College of Textiles, a textile protection and comfort center, which protects against thermal mainly. We just got a new grant for radiant heat for wildfire fighters to protect them, not just the urban fighters with the flash, but also chemical and biological protection.
You know, Lisa, it makes a great story to say that you come from a textile family, but how important is it to be in a place where that is part of the culture? There's a history and there's a kind of collective knowledge of how to work in textiles to your business.
Well, I think it's ultimately very important because we're forging new territories. And I think that, as has been mentioned earlier on the show, just the innovative side of textiles, if you understand how textiles work and how you can tweak them and, you know, push for maximal benefit and start incorporating antimicrobial or freshness products and, you know, just speaking for PureThread, I think that having the deep understanding of how you work from getting to the fiber to the yarn. And as Liz mentioned, you've got wovens, you've got knitted. I mean, we've been able to find all sorts of companies right here in the state that we work with. And I think having the understanding of all the different levels allows us to really maximize that, adding on that biotechnology or medical or life sciences side, to make what we're doing that much more innovative. And one comment then, it, you know, that was important to us are a lot of the social and environmental issues. And we have certainly found, as a company, we are Blue Sign certified, which is really just an environmentally friendly certification. And when I say just, I don't minimize it. It certainly took a lot of effort, but we found, just the interest in participating by all of these manufacturing companies that we partner with throughout North Carolina to be great in that regard. And I think that is yet another advantage of being right here in North Carolina specifically, but certainly being here in the United States.
Yeah, you talked about the interest in sustainability too, and we've been talking about kind of high-tech applications for an industry that has been here for a while. But if I think of other companies here in North Carolina that are really capitalizing on this new interest in sustainability, TS Designs in Burlington, Raleigh Denim that makes jeans here in Raleigh, how much of that has played a part in the revitalization or stabilization of the textile industry, the fact that we want local stuff?
It's really playing a bigger and bigger part. Walmart has announced a program to buy $50 billion more a year of stuff made in the United States. So we get calls. I get two or three, sometimes five calls a week, companies looking to source. We have a website, North Carolina Textile Connect, with 1,400 companies and another 600 related companies on it, where you can find materials, you can find dyers, you can find people who can actually manufacture, knit, weave, or especially the nonwovens industry, which is huge in North Carolina. Companies are looking for minimizing the carbon footprint, but also looking for just quick response. They're looking for people who can deliver the quality that they need right now.
Some industries have returned to this country for that reason.
Returned or moved here. We have three Israeli companies that have moved in the last few years into North Carolina, a Canadian company that just moved. They're doing actually garment manufacture here now.
You talked about Lisa was talking about having a kind of deep knowledge of the whole process for design right through to retailing located here. How transferable is the knowledge from like sock making to plane making and weaving, you know, the high fiber carbons, that we find in automobiles and planes?
Well, that would be a stretch to go from socks to airplanes. But for the basic technology, the basic process of manufacturing fibers and creating a web, a woven fabric in this case that they put the composites in for the carbon fiber composites. There's a lot of similarity.
But there is a kind of genealogy. In other words, it does make sense that those industries would evolve from the folks who made the socks.
And some of these people get hired and reinvent themselves. But I think Robert has a better sock story.
Oh, the sock story. I was doing this, we were shooting in Acme McCrary, and a woman came up to me and said, you know, there are these two women that make socks down in Mount Gilead, North Carolina. And I couldn't get in touch with them, And finally, I was able to get one of them on the phone and say, can I come down and film you? And they were like, I don't know why you want to come film us. But I put them at the end of the documentary, and I went down there, and these two women had started a textile mill knitting socks on 1940s era machinery. And there was only one guy they knew who could repair the machines. He was in his 80s. He knew them. And they produced, each machine produced one sock every 9 minutes. And they were selling them, and they had all the business they could take. And they were crammed into an old service station. And I just loved it. It's one of the greatest stories of North Carolina business ever seen.
Who's buying those socks, and how do they compare to the cheap ones I can buy that might be made somewhere else?
They've got a specialty retailer in the Northwest who they wouldn't even tell me the name of, because I wanted to interview this woman. And they said, no, we don't want, you know, this is our client. We're going to keep her secret. But they started on eBay, and then they developed, and she said they had all the work they could do. They didn't, and I said, do you want any more business? She says, no, we don't. We have everything.
Wow.
And these were two ladies they said they were too old to get hired again in a textile company, and they just decided to start their own little business there.
Well, I got a 2-year-old grandson who actually wears out socks faster than they can make them, so maybe that's an industry too, although you don't use as much fabric.
Right, and we don't know how many of people like there are like that in North Carolina. That's the one thing I don't think even you guys could do at NC State.
It's hard to even collect the data on how many of these companies there are. Like I said, we have 1,400 more traditional textile companies on the website, another 600 that are a little bit different, some that aren't even classified as textiles. Nonwovens is not classified, even though it's huge. Finding these people, getting their websites, getting the links to them, and finding out what they do I think we've had about 4 or 5 different PhD students do part of this as their thesis.
So clearly people are figuring it out and they're getting into the industry. Are there any impediments, or put another way, is there anything we can do to encourage people to create businesses? And I'm thinking in terms of regulation, but also financing, ways to make revenue streams that help capitalize these businesses, and are there regulatory barriers to scaling it up a little bit?
Well, number one is stop saying textiles is dead.
I've learned my lesson.
We do have a lot of barriers, and our U.S. government is not always brilliant in their trade agreements that they make, and they'll trade off textiles because of the labor for something else, thinking that we're going to export something to Vietnam or to Guatemala that we actually don't export. And so some of the trade agreements are not well thought out, and there's a lot of counterfeit. We have some protection for Made in USA. About 50% of the stuff that comes in from other countries that has Made in USA fiber or fabric is not. And so Senator Hagan has just introduced a bill that will really improve the protection of our textile industry from unfair competition. I think our industry can compete with anyone, but not when they don't play by the rules.
I want to thank all of you for being on the program. Bland Godfrey is Dean of the College of Textiles at North Carolina State. Robert Newton, director of the documentary film Still Standing, The Real Story of No. Don't listen to public radio. Those people, they're not reliable. But Robert is, and you can go to our website. Sadly, you have to go to our website. We will drive you to our website, stateofthings.org, to find a link to Still Standing, The Real Story of North Carolina Textile Industry. And I also want to thank Lisa Grimes, CEO of Pure Thread Technologies in Durham. Thank all of you for being on the program.
Thank you.
Coming up next, recipes from a master bread baker, a passion for bread. Stay tuned.